Good evening. Before we begin, I just wanted to ask if there is anybody here who needs the services of our sign language interpreter. Okay, back there. Okay, great. Well, good evening. My name is Laura Bayless, and I work in the Department of Education here at MoMA, and I'd like to welcome you to the last session of our fall 2006 series of conversations with contemporary artists, which is made possible by an endowment established by the Junior Associates of the Museum of Modern Art. The series, which began in 1993, hosted three contemporary artists this fall: Yuri Mazny, Barry Whitmill of Free Play Energy, and tonight, Trisha Donnelly. If you are not able to attend our previous programs, or you'd like to hear this one again, I'd like to draw your attention to moma.org/audio, where you can find recordings available for download for all of our recent Think Modern programs. This evening, I have the pleasure of introducing you to Trisha Donnelly. Trisha was born in San Francisco and received a BFA from UCLA and an MFA from the Yale University School of Art. She is the recipient of the 2004 Central Kunstpreis from Cologne, Germany. Her work, ranging from photographs, drawings, video, sound, and performance art, has been exhibited internationally from Frankfurt to Bologna to Miami and New York. She was featured in the Berlin and Whitney Biennials of 2006, the Moscow Biennial of 2005, the Dakar Biennial and Carnegie International of 2004, and the 2003 Venice Biennale, among many others. Trisha will present her work and then take questions from the audience, so please join me in welcoming Trisha Donnelly.
Good evening. Tonight, since it's such a specific room, I think that instead of what I would normally show you as work, I'm going to give you a description of the 11th prismatic in a series. And so just listen. Do you need me to speak up? Okay. And bear with me. This is reading, and I don't read aloud typically. But it's important because this information needs to register. So bear with my librarian reading skills. A different time is found in faulted space, one not dictated by the other, platonic. I was within the assumption that the object, namely the objects of art, when looked at for long enough, could be cracked, pixelated in links, and shattered. This, I imagine, was a reaction to the amount of space the sculptural object actually took up. The ability to travel around something weakens that thing's defenses and stability. The cable's stress, dissection is a fast series of clicks. Ecstatic in its speed, the mind hops from connection to reference, to memory, to imagined memory, the future. It is like a crash of currents originating from all different directions when this object is taken apart. But it was one day in a photograph that I experienced the shock. A photograph I was looking at for, I suppose, longer than a millisecond, you should, then my brain understood as the average viewing time for something as empty. The image cracked, split it into a stutter form, and time, you know, that sound of a stutter or the object of a stutter that your mind makes. It split, and an 11-sided prism pulsed into formation. A stutter of multiple images connected to the original crack, not images that were referential in any way, not a reminder type. Not like a family of sides, but exactly like a family in its discomfort with their inevitable connection. This prism was an object, a stutter, a pulsing diagram. This was not a mystical experience. Do not make the mistake of that interpretation due to my limited ability to describe the phenomenon. Instead, understand it as a truly metronomed space, a metaphysical suggestion undirected by myself. It was like the brain sighed, coughed, or dialed the phone. So perhaps this is best described in radio. A different time is found in faulted space, one not dictated by the other, platonic. A man's footsteps emerge from what sounds like a narrow corridor. A door squeaks open, a chime is the only beginning for the show.
What? No. Paul, who turns out to be a female, or at least have the voice of one, begins in answer to the announcer's introductory statement, which is, "And the ultimate faulted space is perhaps the photograph. I was within the assumption that the object, namely the objects of art, when looked at for long enough, could be cracked, pixelated in links, and shattered. I had always assumed this was a reaction to the amount of space the sculptural object actually took up. The ability to travel around something weakens that thing's defenses, stability. The cable's stress and dissection is a fast series of clicks. Ecstatic in its speed, one's mind hops from connection to reference to memory to imagined memory, the future. It is like a crash of currents originating from all different directions when this object is taken apart." Paul holds up the photograph to the microphone. This action is only seen by those within the studio. Let's say this lecture is a broadcast. Let's see where that puts us. It puts us in reverse. These are the operators. I could say these photographs are available, but their purpose at this point is instead the invocation of the photographer. The action returns to the scene. This man, James, is dead. These photographs are no one and total. If he was here and she was there and the camera was looked through and back into, dot, dot, dot. These are the operators. Reverberation. The second description of the 11th prismatic starts in reverberation. Listen carefully. When the first sound meets itself, it takes a moment to get over the usual polite recognition. When the collision finally occurs, the sound greets itself and reacts with a need for distance. It first becomes a boomerang-type sound, a hovering circular flight pattern, made up of the stutter of the sounds of the ultimate voice, back and forth between the original, stimulating sound and its reflection. Eventually, the distancing of these two is so great, it is such a long, straight arm, that they go multiple, then become one sound, made of first two, then exponential parts. It is one point all places. One point all places. Do you hear this? Though the sound to the ear is deceptive, the space of the sound is vast. I am not sure what this means, but I am sure that this is the sound. This is the sound of distance, the sound of the natural space between things. And if it is between things and themselves or their own stutter, that distance is vast. In the 11th, there is compressed distance, filed distance. We take a break now for an explanation of inversion. Inversion, which at one point, I guess, was used to describe homosexuality, which is a perfect confusion, is the terror of the double difference. The inversion is the call and response, the double same, the double D resurrector. I'm wrong, perhaps. Perhaps a better description, rather than reverb, that meets itself in the phalanx of the Spartan hoplite, the mass that meets itself, a plasma of men. The phalanx was a unit, a mass of the multiple. Individuality or the claim of it was considered a disgrace. The success of the hoplite's battle style depended on the tightness and unifying force of the phalanx, both emotionally and physically. From the Peloponnesian Wars, on the Battle of Thyrea, and the warrior, Othrades, he rose up from the corpses to erect a monument to the slain. Upon the completion of the monument, he is said to have returned to exact place among the dead, lying in one mass of the phalanx, and commit suicide as the ultimate display of honor. The phalanx unbroken. But in the construction of the monument, he became a point, a laser out and then drawn back into the mass. This is like the photograph. After erecting a monument to the slain, the monument is the image, the flat is the photo. The phalanx is the mass that points arrive to and depart from and return to. Number three is the puff. the third description of the 11th prismatic. The mirror is a lens with a back, a double camera, the photographer and the photograph collected in one, eliminating the physical output of a reproduction, but causing an internal output to infinite of an interior reproducible. This is when the sound meets itself. The view meets itself and with no recognition, demands space. The space that the bounce manifests itself in comes in the shape of a spiral or a prism, cracking at every change and yet maintaining its fusion through light. There are different types of animals. Some learn vanity, but others when vision comes through, though with many animals it is an impossibility, and shows an animal in the mirror, the looker will puff, thinking it is another. A true and natural occurrence that humans have somehow accustomed themselves to. Perhaps we have learned recognition, but the unconscious shock of the view of a human in the mirror when one's face is not their own is daily. The double D resurrector. We undergo a psychic shock each day when we look in the mirror. We see the radio that the voice is emitted from. Most of the time we are in the studio, making corridors with the detached doors wrapped up in on-air broadcast. But radios are smaller than what comes out of them, hence our daily shock. The envelope is too small. The envelope is too small. Roman death cults sometimes inscribe this phrase over their tomb, non omnis morir, or I shall not be entirely dead. Number four is a fissure. Let's say Greta Garbo, what, not who, was feedback. What you see in the photos is the ricochet, the bounce, the push-off, the long arm. Photographically, Garbo equals original prey, one of the most photographed, most erupted images of culture at the time. Garbo woke to a million Garbos, no mirror necessary. In a book of photos, when closed, the photos view is of each other, right up against, and the more she withdrew from her own reflection, the greater the triumph of her capture. And a woman of modern gender, practically butch, am not interested in analyzing Garbo herself, instead Garbo the photograph, as in the landscape of the photograph, the Garbo photograph. Queen Christina makes her way around every inch of the room, demanding that this is the placement into memory, the physical feel-up. Perhaps her success within this particular scene is due what to is due what it to what is due is due is due is due to what she was busy doing in the shifting multiple dimensions. Being the image, one could shift oneself as the image, bounce it off the additional quantities the image delivers. In the image, it is the image that imitates the images, views the image, is in the image. The circular boomerang, Garbo, first computer, on screen, taking in the room of Queen Christina. Suspicious. If one can be flattened and literally in between the pages of a printed text, if one can be printed and one is a dimension, I repeat, one is a dimension. Garbo in multitude Garbo. Garbo, separate who from what? Garbo, separate who from what? Garbo, the star from Garbo, the star from the photograph from flat, the photograph is flat. Paper is flat, but liquid all the same. G, period. Is the name on the door. G, period, is the name by the phone on the door of Garbo. G, just G. On Garbo, one could blame her body's repulsion from the lens on vanity, fear of aging, the generally simplified and often sexist assumption the public leans on a public figure. Instead, separating the who from the what, Garbo is the photograph. Knowing this, when Garbo's photograph saw Garbo's photograph, a ricochet occurred, a stutter, a miniature cataclysm. The push off the lens, the arms up, face in straps, the defense against the photograph was the reverb, the feedback, the 11th. It causes the 11th. It is the 11th. The sound that meets itself demands space and then forgets, changes its mind, reverses, clashes itself into light. This is the 11th prismatic. And that concludes the broadcast for this evening, and I'll leave you with a little bit of troubleless mind. Trouble in mind. Thank you.
sun's gonna shine my back door someday.
So I guess this is a call-in portion. Does anyone have questions? I changed my mind. I have no questions. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you very much.
In honor of Gertrude.